Welcome to El Telejon's La Liga Weekly. Barca's crisis goes on, top of La Liga and still in the Champions League. They beat Real Sociedad by a single goal from a soft penalty. Messi was a bit flat, but then you would be if you'd been carrying the whole of Barcelona for 3 years. But remember, whatever the question is, the answer is not Neymar. Real Madrid played with great intensity for 3.5 months. What else do you want? They're not sweaty tryhards who play like that every game. Fede Valverde has become an accidental hero. He gets better every time he doesn't play. Atletico and Sevilla drew after shockingly producing a 4-goal first half. That would be enough to get Atleti through against Liverpool. In fact, all they need to do is replicate Bournemouth's results at Anfield. Can't be that difficult. Elsewhere, proving he has no concept of irony, Jose Bordalas complained about Celta Vigo's anti-football. Getafe's Champions League hopes suffered a minor setback, so maybe Leandro Cabrera did make a great decision to move to Espanyol, where he's now the goalkeeper. We'll look at the rest of La Liga, including Mallorca winning away. Hooray! Right, quick note. We are recording this Tuesday, but you won't hear it until it's been uploaded Wednesday. So, sorry, Valencia, we've written you off in the Champions League. But it does mean that we can't really give you an update on the fixtures this weekend, where they're played behind closed doors because of the coronavirus. Wash your hands, don't be skanky, all of those things, and good luck, and you know, stay fit and well. Barca-Napoli is behind closed doors, we know that. But other than that, you know, it's, you know, follow the advice. Don't hoard toilet roll, that kind of thing. Right, let's get on with the football, shall we, Terry? Where do you want to start? Do you want to do chronological? I know we should have produced this beforehand, shouldn't we? But Shall we start with Barcelona and then we'll move on to how Real Madrid got on? Because for all everyone was critical about Barcelona's rather flat performance against Real Sociedad, they have somehow turned out to be the winners of the weekend.
Yeah, I think we have to put it into context as well that the Barcelona playing what we all perceive now this season to be a very good Real Sociedad. I know they had the Copa del Rey semi-final in the week, midweek, where they were victorious. But you go into that slightly jaded, but on a high because you've, you know, reached a cup final. Plus, you're playing against the Athletic Bilbao, your rivals, your neighbours in a final in April. So the mood from Real Sociedad, despite making a few changes, would have been good. So let's put that into context. I thought both games this weekend were going to be tough for both teams, Barcelona and Real Madrid. So, yes, it wasn't a classic Barcelona performance. Far from it. They were fortunate to get the win. It was just about a penalty, but I thought Real Sociedad should have had a penalty as well when Griezmann shoved a player that was just going, I can't remember the Real Sociedad player, just going into the penalty area. I thought that should have been a penalty, even with VAR. When VAR looked at it, I thought that's going to be a foul. Pushing the back should be a penalty. So Barcelona created a few chances. Real Sociedad had better opportunities. I thought Piqué and Longley were superb again, but they're far busier week in, week out than they should be. In general, when you look at it overall, it's a good result for Barcelona. Real Sociedad are a really good team. And, you know, Barcelona just scraped home. So it's far from what we used to associate with Barcelona. But I'm afraid at the moment, we're going to have to forget the, you know, the Pep teams, the Luis Enrique teams. You know, this is not that they're not at the same level. It's managers having to chop and change every week, not because he's rotating, it's because he's searching. He's searching for the best pairing at central defence, where I don't think there is a big issue, but he's searching around all the positions, trying to find a solution, in particular in midfield and up front, to see how Barcelona can play anything remotely like he wants them to play.
Where do we start? I know we've talked about Griezmann before. Let's leave Griezmann alone for now. Let's talk. Go on.
I was looking at that game at the weekend and I'm thinking, at the start of the game, I'm looking, he needs to replicate and find his Atletico form. He hasn't even found his Real Sociedad form. Because they were playing Real Sociedad, I'm looking at Real Sociedad and thinking, I'm not sure, in this current form, he wouldn't even get into their starting team. When you look at the quality of their front players, how well they've played this season, he's a million miles away. So we say leave him alone, but it's difficult to, because I just look at him and compare him to other good players that have got great players that have gone to Barcelona and have failed. And it's the top end of the pitch, Coutinho has been exactly the same. We've completely forgotten about Coutinho. He's going to be back at Barcelona because Bayern are not going to pay what Barcelona want for him. He's then going to become an issue. I wouldn't be surprised to see Coutinho playing again at Barcelona next season. So it's when you pay big money like Barcelona have done and other clubs, and you pay the big wages, you kind of get stuck with those players unless their value has gone up. Unless they're playing well and their value has gone up, which could have happened with Griezmann. He could have gone there, he could have ripped it up. He could be worth 200 million now, like Mbappe, for instance. So if that doesn't happen, then you're stuck with a player. Gareth Bale is another one. You know, I know his transfer fee was a long time ago, but the 600 grand a week wages means Real Madrid are stuck with him. And it could be the same with Griezmann. It's a changing world where we're now sending players that cost over 100 million out on loan. And they're coming back again. James Rodriguez is back at Real Madrid. That shouldn't have happened. You know, he should have been sold, or he should be playing, or, you know, he shouldn't be back at Real Madrid on the bench, sitting alongside Gareth Bale and the pair of them thinking, we ain't getting on tonight, you know, unless this happens, unless that happens. Big money players are sitting there, and I wonder what's going to happen to Griezmann next season now.
So on Messi, how do Barcelona start to future-proof Lionel Messi? He's player of the month in La Liga in February. He's the top scorer by five in the league. He's still a brilliant player. But he's going to slow down, isn't he? You know, he's going to be 33 at the start of next season. And you can't just keep on relying on him the way they have. So where will his game evolve over the next couple of years?
Well, I think personally, from his point of view, I think he's going to have to evolve into one of the... I think if they play two orthodox midfield players, you could play, for instance, with the Barcelona players they've got now, De Jong and Busquets, and then you could play Messi ahead of them. And then you could have three faster, younger, harder-working players in attack. Something like that. You know, Messi could be at the tip of a diamond of a midfield four. So I think it's obvious, and everybody assumed that would happen at some stage, that he would drop deeper and he would be the playmaker in a more of a number 10 role, instead of being up the front, back to goal, or playing out wide, trying to find space, trying to be that incisive player that gets you 50 goals a season. So with his attributes that he's always had and that he's got, you need to find the place somewhere where he is the playmaker, the dictator. But you're not at this. You don't have to rely on him being the only one to keep getting you out of trouble in terms of scoring goals. He'll create 20, 30 goals a season. He'll probably still score 15, 20, 25 goals a season. And that's more than any other player will do in that position. But at the moment, he's playing right, he's playing left, he's playing centre forward, he's coming deep and getting the ball because there's nothing else up front. So I think ultimately, you know, to please him, I can't see him moving to a significant club at this stage of his life and his career. I think Barcelona is where he will stay unless they just fall apart completely. And you know, the way the club is being run this season, that's not a million miles away from happening. I just couldn't see Messi bothering. When I talk about significant, maybe America in the future. I don't know how he feels about the Middle East or the Far East, but that's a different... I'm talking about him leaving and coming to the Premier League or going to Italy or going to play for Bayern Munich and Dortmund. I can't see any of that happening. So I think the Barcelona have the advantage as long as they don't completely cock it up, which isn't impossible with the way the club is run at the moment.
Let's move on and talk about Real Madrid, shall we? It's all gone horribly wrong. It was all so good for them, wasn't it? You know, they were unbeaten for 3.5 months. And then, what is it now? One win in five, three defeats from four, two wins in seven, etc. And the main thing seems to be that the intensity has gone. There was no intensity. They found it. And now it's gone again. And there is a bit of a correlation for when Fede Valverde's in or out, but I think that's overstressing the point, isn't it? So is this just where they are? Is this a realistic assessment of how good Real Madrid are until they rework the squad again?
Yeah, I think it's focus, John. I think the intensity is there, but I think the focus in terms of they were defending, they knew they were slight underdogs in this league race because of the amount of titles that Barca have won in the last 10, 11 years. So, and they were focused on winning the league. So they were focused. People like Ramos was focused on defending. They were proud of the clean sheets they were keeping. The goals, the amount of goals that they were, you know, conceding was better than other years. And Courtois was getting credit. And that was their style. A hard team to beat without a prolific goal scorer, although Benzema was performing that role early in the season. But there were signs. We talked about the players that were coming up with important goals. Varane a couple against Hetafe, Nacho getting a winner against Valladolid, Ramos popping up with goals, Casemiro. And all the time you're thinking they need something more. They need to rely more on the top end of the pitch, the Bales, the Benzema, the Iscos, you know, James, Vinicius. And they were at the time when they were winning games and keeping clean sheets. It didn't look like it was working for me up front. It doesn't now. I looked at Betis, Real Madrid the other night. I didn't see anything up front for Real Madrid that would frighten any team anywhere in any division. Benzema's going through a poor patch. So what does he do? He takes responsibility. He drops deep. He goes wide. Disappears from the centre forward position, which is his sole responsibility this season for Real Madrid, is to stay up front, play as a centre forward, play with his back to goal, hold the ball up, get on the end of chances in the penalty area. If you miss chances, it happens, but you have to keep putting yourself in that position. Then you've got Vinicius, who's promising. I've said on the podcast, no more than that. And that's how it should be. He's a young player making his way. He should be coming off the bench. His game, Zidane should be selective with the games that he's playing him in. But he's, no, at the moment, he's first choice. And then you've got Lucas Vazquez on the other side. So if you're Betis and you're playing against an out-of-form Benzema, a 19-year-old, and Lucas Vazquez, you know, is going to work hard up and down. Quality isn't going to be the same as some of the other players that Real Madrid have had in the past. Then as the game goes on and you finally see at halftime, that there's not a lot coming back the other way, that you can get at Real Betis because they've got a centre-back who's playing at right-back. So when they've got, you know, admittedly, Carvajal injured, Nacho is normal replacement, which it wouldn't have been a lot different from Militao. He's ill. So Militao, centre-back, has to play. And you've got Ashraf Hakimi and Alvaro Odriozola playing on loan in other countries. So it's, again, that comes down to planning. But I think once Betis realised at half-time that, hang on, we've got a chance here. We need to be more on the front foot. We've probably shown too much respect. And when they set up on Real Madrid in the second half, first of all, it was a terrific game of football, exactly the type of game I expected and hoped for. And ultimately, Betis came out on top. But there would have been an element in that game of Real Betis looking at Real Madrid and thinking, you know, this isn't, we're not playing against Ronaldo, a flying Benzema, Gareth Bale, you know, a row from years gone by, and the other top class players they've had in the attacking positions, they're blunt. Real Madrid are blunt up front, and I thought it would cost them. I still think it will cost them unless Benzema suddenly finds form or Zidane has a brainwave and decides to try someone else at centre forward, because Mariano came on, just the sheer fact there was two up front made a slight difference. They got more balls in the box, they were more direct. Jovic isn't even making the squad now. I'd say, why not even try Jovic and Mariano Diaz? Because I would suggest they're better than the majority of other centre-forwards in La Liga, but the two of them don't get a chance at all. I think most other clubs in La Liga would take either Jovic or Mariano Diaz. And we're talking even the clubs that are fighting for Europe. You know, if you said to, you know, Villarreal, although just signed Ocasa, would you have had Mariano Diaz and Jovic leading your line? Of course they would. So why not Real Madrid try it and just try it? You know, what, I don't see what they've got to lose. And you know, Benzema clearly isn't working. Front three isn't working. Zidane has to try to find a solution to Real Madrid to start scoring goals and scaring opponents again.
I noticed in Marca, the Spanish sports paper, the Pochettino being linked with Real Madrid again, and then the story about the second choice might be Allegri and all of this. So off the back of a bad run, Zidane was being linked with, obviously been speculated that he was going to get the boot. Whoever wins La Liga, and it will be one of those two, in a sense they'll be off the hook, won't they? But there are still fundamental problems, and you hope that the two clubs have got the sporting leadership at the top end of the club to recognise that there are problems, that they have declined in terms of the world scene, in terms of European super clubs, that they're not up there at the moment. Not, I mean, they could win the Champions League because it, you know, they're still good enough. They've still got the right players here and there who can win games for them. But there's almost a danger. Whoever wins the league, whoever, you know, scrabbles to the end and does it, that they think, right, that's fine. Everything's fine. There are no problems. My major hope is that those two clubs recognise and are honest about the state that they're in.
Yeah, I think it's the Barcelona one is interesting because I'm not sure that the supporters are protesting now, aren't they, against Bartomeu? They want the elections put forward. So that puts a whole different slant on what happens with Quique Setién. Even if he was to win the league, if there's a new president, that's why Xavi turned the job down. So I wouldn't be surprised to see something significant happen in the summer, even if Barcelona were to win the league and the Champions League, then I think Setién would be unsackable. You couldn't sack him, whoever becomes president. But if they were to just win the league and go out in the Champions League and a new president comes in, we know what it's like. It brings a new manager. They'll promise a new manager when they're canvassing to be voted in. They'll promise new signings, which has happened historically in the past. Then Setién is a goner. So I think it's two different sort of ways we can look at it. With Real Madrid, I actually think Zidane should still be the manager next season, whatever happens. I do actually think that they've got some sort of plan, which has involved buying young players, spending literally hundreds of millions of pounds on, you know, three young Brazilians, other players that they've brought into the club. I think they seem to have a plan of buying the best young players they can get for the 40, 50 million euro range. Is Zidane the right manager to bring through young players? I'm not sure about that. I mean, he's playing Vinicius. He's brought through Fede Valverde when other managers might not have had the courage to play him on a regular basis and pick him ahead of the likes of Modric and Kroos. So I think Zidane, I'd be surprised if Zidane isn't there next season. But it needs a plan. It needs to be, you know, not moving Gareth Bale on was a big blow to Zidane because he would have liked the money to have been able to invest in players that he wants to use. So that's an issue. So in terms of, it's interesting, when managers stay at clubs sometimes, I actually think that's one of the reasons Pochettino left Spurs in the first place, that he wasn't able to move out players that he didn't want to play on a regular basis or he thought but didn't have a future. You know, some owners and chairmen of clubs, they want every last penny they can get. They don't want to undervalue a player that they sell and they end up having to keep them because no one meets that valuation. So I think both squads do need an overhaul, and that means moving on players that have served you well and having the courage to back the manager because, you know, they're both good managers. But I would like to hope that Real Madrid's, who seem a bit more stable, believe it or not, with Florentino Perez, who's been there a long time and continues to be at the top of the club. I would like to think there's more stability there with Barcelona, I'm not so sure.
Okay, let's leave Real Madrid and Barcelona there. We'll take a quick break and then we'll get on with the best of the rest of La Liga. Welcome back. Atleti 2, Sevilla 2. So the best of the rest, with all due respect to Getafe, of course. Probably a more entertaining game than we expected. Certainly the first half was. Similarities between the teams, contrasts between the teams as well, but they are both six games unbeaten. So Atleti, Sevilla, Terry, what do you think? What did you make of it?
There was more goals than I thought. I thought Sevilla and a promising version of Atletico Madrid. So the fact there was four goals in the first half led me to get carried away and believe that we were going to get a 4-4 draw when the second half they cancelled each other out. Big games coming up in Europe. It's a strange game where the manager wants to play a strong team because it's against good opponents. They want to play a strong team because of their league position, but at the same time, Sevilla are playing Roma in the Europa League. Atletico are playing Liverpool. So there's a little bit of tinkering going on, but it was good. I mean, the only thing that came close to spoiling it was the referee who officiated the game almost by remote control, where he seemed afraid to give any decisions and was quite happy just to refer everything to VAR. Unfortunately, I think is becoming the case now for a lot of referees, where they're just casually giving a penalty and thinking, well, I'll give that, and then let's see if VAR will clear it up, and then VAR go, we don't really want to go against the official. Let him go and have a look at the touchline, and he goes across, and you can find the reason to back the original decision that he gives. Because I think both penalties in that game were debatable. But in general, I thought it was a good game. And, you know, it's pleasing for Atletico to get João Félix back among the goals. Morata scores a penalty. De Jong looked excellent up front. He took his goal fantastically well. As I say, Campos with a penalty for Sevilla. I thought it was a really entertaining game. And much more entertaining than I originally thought it was going to be, if I'm being honest. What did you think that as well? Were you expecting a physical 0-0 with 12 bookings and players being rested and not the setups that we normally see? But I was pleasantly surprised how strong both teams were.
Yeah, and how attacking Atleti were. I mean, the teams in it, there was a similarity, isn't there, in that. I know their formations are not exactly the same, but they each had two sort of attacking midfielders with a main striker as well, which is good to see, wasn't it?
I like Goodelli. Is that how you pronounce it?
Goodelli.
He looks to be a real find. I mean, he's 28 years of age. He was one of the cheapest signings that Sevilla made. And the way he plays has changed Sevilla in recent weeks. He's playing, I think, essentially in a three-man central defence. It's almost came about by accident in the fact it was tried in one game and he played well, or he went there during a match and he's playing well there. And he just pops into midfield when the number João Félix goes deep. He goes and marks him. Then he drops back in. He's a really intelligent player that, at 28 years of age, as little as Sevilla paid for him, with all the other players that came, I think I've been really impressed with him. I wouldn't say I've been impressed with him the most, because I think Diego Carlos has been a fantastic player. When you see what players of his caliber, what type of central defenders, how much people are talking about the valuation, 25 million. Koundé's been a good signing. He's younger. He's only 21. He cost a similar amount. I think Suso's gone off the boil. But it was for Atletico, it's pleasing to see Llorente get an opportunity and play well again. So slowly but surely he's making progress. And when I look at Atletico now, from the first leg against Liverpool, and you're seeing Trippier 100% improves Atletico Madrid from that first leg, which he missed. And João Félix massively improves Atletico Madrid. Will he play Costa from the start? 100% fit Costa, match fit Costa would be a real asset in the second leg at Anfield, but he's not that at the moment. He's significantly away from it. 20-odd minutes is about, he's level at the moment. So probably Morata gets the start. It's going to be interesting to see if, what Simeone does in the second leg to try and, keep a clean sheet, at the same time provide a threat at the other end. Game I can't wait to see, to be honest.
Give us a quick overview of the relegation situation again, Terry. I mean, obviously, it hasn't changed massively week to week, although obviously a bad week for Espanyol in particular, beaten by Osasuna, not a good performance. Ended up with Cabrera in goal, which I know can happen because, goalkeeper sent off late in the game and all of that. But just, a couple of weeks ago, we were thinking that they might be getting it sorted out. Same time, so this weekend, Mallorca win away at Eibar, dragging Eibar right back into it. Valladolid unlucky to get hammered, sort of hammered. In the scoreline was a hammering against Athletic, but the performance not necessarily. Leganés, tremendous goal, tremendous results against Villarreal. there's no obvious basket case down there at the moment, is there? Obviously, Espanyol are bottom, so you know everything tells you they must be the worst team.
Yeah, I think Abelardo has to take a bit of blame. He's been 4-4-2. He had success at Alaves with that. He started at Espanyol with success with that. In recent weeks, he's been going with like a 4-5-1 with Sergi Dada playing off the front. I thought Raúl de Tomás was playing well because of the efforts of Caleri, who was knocking himself out every week. Unselfish centre-forward, works hard, is physical. And once you took him out of the team and you then asked Raúl de Tomás to do Caleri's job and score goals in every game, I think they're asking for trouble. At half-time, he made the change. He brought him back on. He brought Caleri back into the fold. But it was half a game wasted by Espanyol. And then Abelardo has got to be furious with the two players that cost his team the game. Victor Sanchez with a ridiculous handball. I mean, it's a penalty. When you look at it, his arm goes out. There's no need for him to use that action with his arm. He could have cleared it. He could have left it. So, you know, there's a player there that's plenty of experience, gives away the cheapest penalty of the weekend. And there was a few of them to Osasuna. And then Espanyol, with Diego Lopez in goal. You know, I mean, he gets the first booking is for dissent over that penalty, which was an obvious penalty. He's 38 years of age. Then he comes out on the edge of the box, takes it on the edge of the penalty area where he must have known this is, you know, very close to me being handling it outside the penalty box. Could be a free kick. I'll get booked. We'll be down to 10 men. We've used all us. 38 years of age. So I think those two players in particular let Espanyol down and Abelardo with the wrong team selection. But as regards to the rest of them, there was teams that thought they were safe that clearly are not now. You mentioned Valladolid. I thought they were terrific and lost 4-1. On the same hand, I could say Athletic Bilbao have been terrific in recent weeks and have lost games they should have won. Then suddenly out of the blue, they have five or six attempts at goal and four of them go in. Valladolid had numerous attempts on goal. They just got the one and thought they were back in the game. Sandro with a terrific goal, but it was just one of those days. Sometimes you try to find logic in a game, and I tried to find logic in the VRL Leganés one. It should have been 3-4-5-0 at half-time to VRL. And then you're looking at the comeback from Leganés in the second half, which consisted of an unbelievable strike from a super-talented player, another player that's Real Madrid on loan, 21 years of age, Oscar Rodriguez, who showed the quality that he wouldn't be a million miles away from being what Brahim Diaz does for Real Madrid. And they spent a lot of money on buying him, a lot of money on salary for Brahim Diaz, who we don't see anymore at Real Madrid. There's very little difference between Oscar Rodriguez and a player that they've spent money on. He scores a wonder goal, then they get a penalty. Other than that, they barely had attempts on goal. So, you know, we analyse stuff. Where is the logic in how Athletic won 4-1 at Valladolid? And where was the logic in somehow Leganés? At half-time, they were dead and buried. 1-0, no sign of a comeback. One goal out of the blue. The belief of Villarreal, they panicked. They've lost to other teams at home this season that are rounds where Leganés are in the division. And the game completely changed. Villarreal didn't have any belief going forward. Didn't create as many chances as they did in the first half. And there was a sense of, you know, you looked at Villarreal and thought, they actually don't believe they're going to win this game anymore. And they should have been 5-0 up at half-time. So the relegation battle is firmly on, I would say, up to Alaves. You mentioned Valladolid. I think Alaves still have work to do. I'm not saying for one moment they'll go down because it was a hard-fought 1-1 draw on Friday against Valencia to open the week's fixtures up. That's what you're going to get from Alaves. They're 32 points. They're 7 points above it, but they still need to do some work. But for Valladolid, Eibar, they're firmly in the relegation battle now. Great win for Mallorca, first away win of the season. Great win for Leganés, first away win of the season. As you said, it was a desperate weekend for Espanyol.
Right, I think that summarises La Liga for now. So we'll leave it there. And I think maybe Terry will, because there's obviously one massive game in the Liverpool-Atleti game, and then the Europa League games as well. So we'll maybe come back later in the week and have a look at those as we're recording on Zencastr. It gives a little bit more flexibility. And we just don't know what's happening with the La Liga fixtures yet, whether they're behind closed doors. I don't think there's any suggesting yet, as I speak, that they're going to be called off. But we'll see. fingers crossed that we get some football. Fingers crossed that, you know, the virus starts to die away now. And enjoy your football this week. And we'll see you for another podcast soon. Bye-bye.